Good afternoon. Thanks for coming. This is the last session before the party, so I'll try and finish on time, which, if you've seen me speak before, will be an absolute miracle because I waffle on for England. So, my name is Mike Jordan. I am a program manager or technical program manager. I work out of Redmond in Washington at the Microsoft headquarters. My accent belies where I come from, which is England. But I joined Microsoft in 2000, and in 2004 I moved over to the US, and I joined Link quite a while ago. I moved from live meeting to Link, so I've been around a bit and done a lot of this kind of stuff. So this session has got one of the longer titles in the conference. I'm not sure if it's the longest one, but it's pretty close. Basically, we're talking about how I do large meetings in Microsoft. Why is it Mike Jordan? Well, because for better or worse, I've been one of the people in the Link and Skype organization who've been nominated to actually make sure that the large meetings in Microsoft actually work well. So I've done this a lot. And when we say large meetings, we're talking of anything up to 1,000 users attending a Link meeting, which is pretty good. By the way, if you hear me say live meeting at any time, strike that out immediately in your brain and think Link. Because I used to present live meeting as well, I quite often say live meeting because it just rolls off the tongue. Okay, so this is all about Link and not about live meeting. So there we go. These are the session objectives. I think you can see them down the front there. Okay, I can't. So basically, it's to understand what we do with Link 2013 to support large meetings and to get my best practices to find out what I do and what I don't do. Okay. What we are not covering today, and this is really important, you've heard Gurdeep stand up on Tuesday and say that future versions of Link are going to support very large meetings. Note he didn't say exactly how many very large is, because we don't know yet, okay? There is work going on now for Link to support much larger meetings based on technology we are developing at the moment. Because we're developing it, we can't actually talk about exactly what's going on at the moment, okay? So all these features, I know. Shoot me, I'm only the messenger. So all this discussion is going to be about what you can do today. You can go back and you can do this today in your organization, okay? Come to next year's Link conference and we'll tell you all about what you can do tomorrow. But that, of course, will be yesterday, tomorrow. So there you go, okay? Confused? You will be. Right, so what are we talking about? Link is great at meetings. That's what Link does. Link is brilliant at doing meetings, especially collaboration meetings. I want to talk to my friend in the third row there. I can find his SIP address or his name. I can connect to him. I can chat with him. I can IM him. If he has a webcam and I have a webcam, we can talk. If I want to share my desktop or share applications, I can do that very easily. That's exactly what Link is designed for. That's P2P, person-to-person, point-to-point, okay? Link does that. Link is also really, really good for doing the scheduled, planned, multi-party meeting. So in Microsoft, we might call this a team meeting or a spec review or a session review where you've got a more structured idea where you've maybe got people in conference rooms, people dialing in from home, people calling in from home, they want to see what you're discussing. Link is great at that as well. Doesn't need much management. You schedule the meeting in Outlook or using other tools, then off you go and you can do things. It just works, okay? Link is great for that as well. Then you get into the more what we like to call managed meetings. That's the blue, that's the I suppose that's really bluish gear there. The managed meetings, okay? These are more the very large meetings that you may well have where you've got one person presenting to lots of people in the room and then lots of people listening online. Wow, not unlike this meeting. Okay, so they're the kind of meetings that we're focusing on to some extent today, but then you've got the meeting. So imagine your CEO, your manager, whatever, wants to present the company future to all the attendees or to 1,000 people online and lots of people in one or two rooms. Okay, they're what we call the white glove meetings. These are the ones that really need a lot of care. These are the ones in the past you would have spent megabucks, you'd have signed up an AV company, an audio video company, to come in and do that work. This is what Link is also good at, providing you do what I'm going to tell you today. Okay? So we're looking today at the white glove meetings. These are the ones that you have to set up and you have to manage yourself. And the stuff I'm going to tell you today is best practice. Doesn't mean you have to do this for every meeting, but actually, if you want a meeting to go well, you could think about doing some of this stuff for those meetings as well. Okay, just before we get to server requirements, if you want to ask questions and answers, if you want to ask questions, I'll give you the answers, hopefully. It's easy if, I got told off last time because I missed half the room. I tend to look one side or the other. So if you want to ask questions, put your hand in the air or preferably come and talk to the mics. That would be much easier because then these rooms are really weird. If you speak over that side, this side can't hear. So I prefer if you did come to the mics, that would be really helpful. But please ask questions. I may put them off to the end and we'll see how things go. Okay, so for the largest meetings, what do we need? What does Link need? Okay, server requirements. We need basically a separate pool for anything over 250 users. Let me explain what that means. So Link is very good, as I said, for doing multiple meetings, up to thousands of meetings on a single pool with 5,000-6,000 users, not all meeting together, no, but talking once or twice, just chatting, all that kind of thing. Link is great for that kind of thing. You could have multiple pools. What are pools? Well, if you don't know what those are, in Link, you have an account. You have basically an account in Link. That account lives in one pool. It can't live in more than one pool. It lives in one pool. But you can join a meeting held by somebody in a different pool. So on my slide here, I've got one attendee connected to pool A who lives in pool A. One attendee connected to pool B lives in pool B. They can talk together. They can chat together quite happily. Link does that. Okay, but those pools are set up for collaboration, for lots of meetings all going on at the same time, lots of small meetings, lots of chatting. Okay, if you want to do a large meeting over around about 250 users, up to 1,000 users, which is what Link supports at the moment, and I can get into a lot more details of why we put the limit at 1,000 users, ask me afterwards over a beer and I'll tell you. Okay, so up to 1,000 users, we recommend, and in fact we require, for it to work properly, a dedicated pool. So this means you set up new front-end servers, a new back-end SQL server, Link server, basically three servers. That becomes your large meeting pool. You can, and we have tested this, run it on Link Standard Edition, but the recommendation is to use front-end and the back-end SQL to make it run the most effectively. Okay, so in my diagram here, pool C is my large meeting pool. It only has, in this case, one user account in that pool. That user account I've called the organizer. Okay, it can be anybody. If I want to organize a large meeting, that's Mike Jordan, and I want to send the invite out, I can do that, but when the meeting happens, my account must live in that pool C, must be moved over by the Link administrator to that pool C, because it's the meeting organizer's account that governs which pool and which pool resources the meeting actually uses. Okay? So the important thing is have one account that the large meeting is organized by. That organizer will send the meeting invite out. That organizer's account will live in the large meeting pool. That's important. And then you get all the really cool features of large meetings because Link can support that. Link is designed to support 1,000 users in one pool on one large meeting. So that's a good thing. Okay? So that's the organizer account. And there we are, we have pool C, that's the large meeting pool. Okay, nothing too, yes, you need extra servers, but it's nothing too onerous. Okay, so planning ahead. When you've decided that you want to hold your large meeting and you've created your large meeting pool, so you've got your extra servers, you've added it to your topology, that's a once-in-a-lifetime job, it's done, okay? Then you need your Link administrator who's the guy who sits in a little closed office and has a laptop, or not a laptop, but has a screen, and he types away all day administrating link and making sure your link is running okay. You ask him to set up either your large meeting organizer account, or you ask him to move over the organizer, i.e. Mike Jordan's account, over to that large meeting pool. Okay? You also ask him to create what I call a large meeting policy. It's a meeting policy. Now, in Link, for those who don't know, who aren't administrators, you can set up policies, conferencing policies, which control what happen during a conference. So are users allowed to record within that conference? Okay. How many users can join that conference? All those things are set up using either the Link control panel or PowerShell, the Link server management shell, and the command is, if you're creating a new one, new underscore CS conferencing policy. Okay, that creates a new policy, and then you add lots of parameters. Okay, the one parameter that we're talking about now is allow large meetings $true. Set that for true, and that will enable large meetings. Let me just move on to the next slide. One question. Do you want to use the mic so everybody can hear? This is going to be embarrassing, I know.
I'm not sure you can answer it, but what exactly does that parameter do other than hide the participant list?
What does the allow large meetings true do? Great question. It does three things. The first thing is, and we'll be talking a lot about this later, it hides the attendee roster. Okay, so I'll talk a bit more about that later. That's the first thing. Second thing is, it disables all IM error messages. Now, when you've got large meetings, you can have a lot of error messages flying around about instant messages. So this guy hasn't received the instant message. This guy was on a device that couldn't receive the instant message at the time. So it disables all those messages, because those messages cause a lot of network traffic and a lot of server bottleneck. Okay. And the third thing it does is it disables the gallery view, the multi-party view at the top of the screen. So it turns that off as well, and disables the ability for users to turn that on as well. Okay, they're the three things that actually take up the most resource on a Link server when you've got lots of people connecting to one meeting. One is managing the attendee roster, the list of people who join the meeting. Second thing is video, handling all the video calls. And the third thing is handling not so much the IM itself, but handling all the error messages that IM, that instant messaging causes when things go wrong. Okay, so they're basically the three things that parameter does. Okay, so what we've done, we've created a large meeting policy here called, and the name or the description is large meeting policy for special events. Can be called anything at all, but we've called it large meeting policy for special events. There are some things you might want to think about, and there are some other parameters that are useful for setting when you're creating this policy. So one is allow multi-view. That's actually the gallery view. That's almost superfluous, because allow large meetings true also does that. It disables the gallery view. But there are sometimes a few occasions where you may not want to use allow large meetings equals true, and I'll explain those later. But allow multi-view, that turns off the gallery view. Okay. Allow annotations. You don't want 1,000 people trying to annotate on the slides. Turn that off. It causes a lot of traffic. Allow polls is an interesting one. Polls are a great way to get feedback, but sometimes they can cause a lot of network traffic. We tend to leave them on, but if you have a lot of network issues and a lot of problems with large meetings, you might want to turn polls off. Enable application and desktop sharing. Turn it off. That causes far too much network traffic. So basically what we have is, for large meetings, we support PowerPoint presentations. Video embedded in PowerPoint presentations, possibly, and I'll be explaining that later, but enable desktop application sharing, definitely we can't support for above 250 users, because it's just too heavy on resource on the servers, but also on the network as well. So be aware of that. Conference recording. This is an interesting one. There's no reason to disable this, apart from the fact that some of your larger meetings, you may not want recorded. I know that sometimes we have meetings that are basically private or secret, and we don't want to record those. It is possible to turn recording off and on with this policy, okay, CS conferencing policy, so you can do that there. And then you can also set the maximum video size as well, the video resolution. If you've got one person, one video camera sending sending things out, you can still run it HD, that's fine. But if you have a lot of people on lower bandwidth networks, you may then want to drop the video down to VGA. You may want to do that. It's up to you. In Microsoft now, we do HD video, and it works fine for 1,000 people. Okay, maximum meeting size, you must set that to 1,000. By default, it's set to 250. You can, of course, set it lower. If you set it to anything lower than 1,000, when, say you've set it to 800, when the 801st person joins the meeting, they will get a message to say, I'm sorry, the meeting is full. Okay, so make sure you set that to 1,000, and then everybody who wants to join can join. Okay. Question, Mike. Oh, go on, shout it out. I'll repeat it.
Any chance this will go beyond 1,000 in future releases?
Any chance this will go beyond 1,000 in future releases? Gurdeep did announce that we are working on supporting very large meetings. Gurdeep announced that he is the manager, so therefore, I would guess we will be. But more than that, I cannot say at the moment, because I'd have to kill you all if I did and burn the recording. So, but Gurdeep did announce that we are going to be supporting something like that. So yes, yeah, okay. It may not be using this technology, okay? It will still be Link, very much it'll be Link, but it may be, we may be working on different technologies, but that's as far as I can go. Okay, so once you have created that large meeting policy, you can then use either the control link control panel, or you can use PowerShell to apply that policy to the user. Now link meeting policies, the conferencing policies, get applied to a user or to a site. Okay, so you can assign, or globally, you can assign them globally. So you could assign a global policy to that to that pool. That will work. A pool policy to that pool, or you can assign it to user. Best to assign it to the meeting organizer, because you have to make sure that the policy is applied to the meeting organizer at the time of the meeting. Doesn't have to be the time the meeting is scheduled, but when the meeting actually happens, the policy must be applied. So if it is a standard user account, you've moved into that pool, apply it when the user is starting the meeting, and then take it off afterwards. Okay, so scheduling the meeting. A few things. Use a dedicated account, as I said, to schedule a meeting. Now, when you schedule a meeting, that person is the meeting organizer. And the meeting organizer generally is a standard presenter, but there are one or two things that you may have to think about when thinking about who's going to schedule the meeting as well. Okay, so we're going to create the invite, we're going to declare the presenters, we're going to check the meeting options, and then we're going to look at why you don't highlight the text in the meeting and copy it to a new calendar meeting. Okay, because there are things that will break. And look, we're going to go into a demo. So let's see if this works. So, number 8. Good. This is my laptop. I am now going to schedule a meeting. I'm going to schedule a meeting from 4:30 to 6 o'clock. Don't worry, we are not going to have that we're not going to have this session going on until 6 o'clock, because I know I'm standing between you and the party, so don't worry. So I'm going to invite Jim Glynn, I'm going to invite Dave Landis, I'm going to invite Amy, and I'm going to invite Diane. Okay, and I'm going to say a large link conference meeting, just to prove you that I can type occasionally. Okay, and now I'm going to create a link meeting there, okay, and I'm going to go into meeting options. Now, whoa, that looks odd. Let me go back to the slides for a second. Okay, that's what you will see when you schedule a large meeting. if you're using Link on premises. Okay, you have your own Link servers. That's what you will see. You will see these. I think mouse works. No, it doesn't. Who? Okay. Mouse works. Okay, so over here you see these two options. Okay, one of these is my dedicated meeting space. I'm sure you've been to other sessions where people have explained it. In case you haven't, it's really important that I explain this to you. Okay, if you use that bottom option, which is the default, my dedicated meeting space, it means that every Link meeting you hold is the same meeting. So if I schedule a meeting from 3 till 4 and another meeting from 4 till 5, the people joining the 4 till 5 meeting can also join the 3 till 4 meeting as well. You can check that because the URL for the meeting is always the same. Okay? Also, if you use that option, all these meeting options down below aren't grayed out. They're not available because you can't change the meeting configuration because it's always the same meeting. Okay? So what you can do here is to choose the top option, which says a new meeting space, so I control permissions. That creates a unique meeting for this one specific time. Okay? Or if it's a recurring meeting, for more than one specific time. But it creates a new unique meeting. The URL is unique for that meeting. The dial-in conferencing code is unique for that one meeting. But also what it does is to highlight these meeting options further down as well. So you can choose all those options. That's cool. That's what we want. So let me go back to my slides, to my demo machine, and you will see that option is not there. Full disclosure here, for ease of demo, I didn't bring my large server. I have a big 128 gig server with lots of memory and lots of hard disk space and that kind of stuff. It would have cost me a lot of money to bring it down here and probably got it broken. So I'm actually using Office 365 as the demo system here. Everything you can do on here, you can do on Office 365, apart from to apply the large meeting policy and to have meetings above 250 users. Okay, so for demonstration purposes, I can use Office 365. I can schedule and manage meetings up to 250 users, okay, but I can't go from 250 to 1,000 users on Office 365. However, as we've already said, Gurdeep has announced that there will be et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so at the moment, 250. But everything else that you see still works, and in fact, you'll see how it still works. So why aren't those two options there? Because in Office 365, every meeting you create is a unique meeting anyway. So those two options that I showed on the previous slide actually don't really matter. It's a unique meeting in Office 365 anyway. But these options do matter. Okay, people don't have to wait in the lobby. Who doesn't have to wait in the lobby? Think very carefully before you schedule this. Yes, you may want to invite people outside your company to this large meeting, but one of the issues is that somebody has to manage the lobby. If you say, anybody from my organization, the meeting organizer, doesn't wait in the lobby, then you have to allow 1,000 people into the meeting. That could get really painful, okay? So just think about that before you set that, okay? So I'm going to say anyone, no restrictions, and I think that's fair. Obviously, you would set it as you want, but bear in mind you have to manage that. This is really important. Who is going to be a presenter? Anyone from my organization, that is really bad. In this situation, that'll be really bad because you're running a large meeting. So what I want to do is to say people I choose. And then I can go and choose presenters. And note here I have the list of people. Now, a lot of people will quite rightly use distribution lists here. Okay? That's perfect. That's fine. But if you want the person to be a presenter, then add them separately, even if they belong to that distribution list as well. Okay? Because then you can individually declare that person as a presenter. So in this case, I'm going to add Jim as a presenter. The meeting organizer is always a presenter anyway, so that's all right. Okay, three more options down here. Disable IM. I'll be showing IM mute later. If you've been to one of the new client features sessions, you'd have seen IM mute already demonstrated, but it's worth showing you again because it's pretty useful, okay? The only thing is, if you disable IM mute here, So, sorry, if you enable IM mute, so if you disable IMs, okay, which you can do now in Link, it's a new feature, if you click that box here, so if you do that here, you can't turn it back on again in the meeting. You can't enable it in the meeting. That could be a problem. So just think about that carefully. I'm not going to schedule that. In my slide that I have that one actually ticked, but think about that. Mute all attendees, that's actually quite a good one. You can undo that when you're in the meeting. And also block attendees' videos, you can undo that one in the meeting as well. For now, for my demonstration, I'm just going to mute all attendees because I don't want lots of feedback on the desk here. But I'm going to allow attendee videos for the sake of one of the demos I'm going to do later. Normally, I think you block that because don't forget it's attendee videos, not presenter videos. Whatever you do here, the presenter can still see, can still show videos. Okay. If you're always scheduling large meetings, you can say remember settings, which may be right. I'm not going to in this case. I'm just going to say OK, and I am going to send this meeting. OK, so the meeting has now been scheduled, and I can join the meeting. OK, have a good time, have a good meeting, we're joining. OK, see here it says presenter muted the audience, and you can also get a wonderful picture of a very handsome presenter there. Hi. That'd be me. Hi. Wow. OK, speaker is muted, so that's cool. I can unmute myself if I want to, but I don't want feedback. So that's me in the meeting. On my demo machine here now, I also have two other virtual clients running. So I'm going to join the meeting from this virtual client. I don't have Outlook running, how silly, but a nice new feature of the Link client is I can go into the meetings and note it refreshes, and I can now see that meeting that was just scheduled. Note it's in blue, that means I can double-click it, and I can join the meeting. Have a good meeting, we're connecting you. And I'm in, and Amy Albert has just joined, and when she joins, my video should come up in a second because I'm sending the video, hopefully. Yep, there we go. What a handsome guy. Oh, that's me again. That joke gets really old very quickly, doesn't it? Okay, so and in here, I'm going to use Outlook, and then we get the meeting come in, and I can accept the meeting, or I can look at the URL. That's the URL for the meeting, and I can join the meeting there. Okay, have a good meeting. We're connecting you. So Jim is also there. Jim is a presenter. You can see that in the attendee list, and you can also see that in the actions. He can do lots of things. Okay, Amy, who is just a meeting participant, if you go in there, yeah, she can't present anything, and obviously she has virtually no meeting actions all grayed out. Okay, so that's that. I'm just going to join through two other clients as well. Actually, let me show you one really cool feature. So if you're when you're presenting this kind of content, you may want to present it full screen. So what you can do is to pop the video out here, okay, and then present that full screen and up on there. And I'll show you later. Maybe we'll pin that. And we can also lock that. I'll show you later. But what I'm going to do is just bring that camera around so you can see what I'm doing here. And here I have an iPad and a iPad, that's a very small iPad you make calls on, so that'd be an iPhone. Okay, so I'm just going to go into the meetings there. You probably can't see there, there we go. That I've got the same option there for large meeting conferencing, and I can join the meeting there, large meeting link conference, and I can join from the join button there. And also from the Surface, which is a wonderful device, I can go into the calendar there, and we've got large meeting conference, and you can see also there, possibly as soon as you can see that big blue square, which actually says join, so I can click on the blue square, and I'm going into the meeting as well. So I've got lots of people now in that meeting, but I'll put that back there so you can see that handsome presenter standing up there and presenting. Good. Okie dokie. So we're all in a meeting. So I schedule the meeting, and now, surprise, surprise, everybody has joined the meeting. So that's worked pretty well. course, normally you get a round of applause, but not in this case. That's fine. Because everybody does it, and Link just works, doesn't it? I mean, that's the thing. Everybody just expects Link to work nowadays, so it doesn't need a round of applause. It's just great. It works. Good. Okay, the room layout. Let's think about room layout. A few caveats, first of all. Normal Link meetings don't need all this stuff, okay? We are talking very much about the white glove service. This is when you've got the CEO, the financial director, especially the HR director, because they're the ones who are responsible for giving me the pay rise at the end of the year. Okay, when they've got those meetings, these are the ones that you want to really manage well. Okay, in the larger meetings that aren't quite so important, you may have one or two people doing these kind of roles. But for the largest meeting, where basically you're replacing the AV company, you're doing all this yourself, okay, in that case, you want up to 4 accounts and 4 laptops. Why? I will show you in this next slide. Okay, so why 4 Link accounts? Well, first of all, when you join a meeting in Link, you can log in through Link using multiple clients. So I can log in on here, I can use the same account to log in here, and same account to log in here. But if I join a meeting on my laptop and then try and join on my desktop, it will log me off my laptop, because you can only have what we call active endpoint at one time for a meeting. Okay, so that's important to remember. So that is why we have 4 different laptops here. 1, 2, 3, 4, logged in with 4 different accounts. Now, what we do in Microsoft, we actually have 4 named accounts. So we have Redmond AV for this laptop, okay, down here, where's my mouse? That laptop there, okay? So this is the one that's connected to the audio system in the room. So we have the microphones, the wireless mics, like what I've got on now, the wireless mics and everything, fed into the PC that is broadcasting the audio through Link. Okay, so this is logged into the Link meeting. We also have the video connected to the same machine. Why? Because Link, back in Link 2010, it only did video switching through audio. So if somebody spoke, the video would switch to that person's video as well. Okay. In Link 2013, I'll show you something else in just a second, which is slightly better, but even so, at best, and also, if you want to have lip sync, so you want my lips to move with my voice, then have the same, use the same laptop with the same Link account, and that'll work fine. That's the first one. By the way, you should all be getting these slides after the conference. I think they will come in a PDF format, but you should be getting these slides anyway. Okay, quick question.
Is that the organizer that's logged in?
Is that the organizer logged in? That doesn't need to be. And in fact, I would recommend not to have the organizer logged in to the AV, using the AV feature. Okay? I'll tell you why in just a second. Okay?
But do they need to be a presenter?
The organizer of the meeting is always a presenter. Ah, okay, yes, yes. The question was, does that laptop account need to be a presenter? Yes, it does. Yes, because you're presenting audio and you're presenting video, and you also may need to control the audio and the video as well. So yes, you should be a presenter. In fact, all these accounts, bar one that I'll tell you about now, should be presenters. The second one is the one that's connected to the in-room projector. What you're seeing when you're in the room, okay? This one, we also log into Link, and we run the Link content full screen, okay? So when the presenter changes the slides, and that will be on this third laptop here, which is also connected to Link, that's the one that the presenter has the slides up. They can see the slides. When they click change on the slides, that changes on the machine connected to the screen being projected, and then everybody can see the slides on the screen. We use this method all the time. Now, the only time that this falls flat is if you have poor network connectivity and the presenter here clicks the slide to advance the slides, it may take a second or two for the slides to advance in the room. That can be a problem. But then, of course, if you think about it, 1,000 users, 1,000 users connected remotely will also be seeing a delay in the slides. So that's a good representation of what everybody else is seeing as well. So that works as well. The fourth PC in the fourth account is the moderator account. That's the one that the person is monitoring the IM, monitoring Q&A, and monitoring anything else about the meeting, and also maybe uploading additional slides into the meeting. And I'll show you that in just a second as well, because that's quite a cool little feature as well for Link there. Okay, the question?
So the one on the bottom right, PC connected to in-room screen showing shared presentation content, that's just a garden variety participant?
So the question was, this PC here, the PC connected to the in-room screen, that's just a participant. Yes, it can be just a participant. Don't be tempted to connect the AV laptop to the screen. The reason is that Link, when you're looking at the Link videos, let me just show you this for a second. Link showing the Link videos, so you can see here my video, it's actually a mirror image. Oh, let me do that. It's a mirror image of me, okay? Because the video that I'm seeing, okay, is a mirror image of me. Okay, because it makes it much easier when I'm doing a one-to-one conversation. Otherwise, if I lift up this hand, on the screen it shows me holding up that hand. It feels weird. I've done that on other systems. It's just weird. So if you have a webcam on, if you're projecting the image that's also from here, then they will see a mirror image of whatever's in the room, which can be really confusing. When it's on a large screen, you're expecting to see the right aspect image or the right representation of the image. Okay, but yes, to answer the gentleman's question again, that can be just a logged-in user. It can also be a presenter. To be safe, it's good to be a presenter, but it can just be a logged-in user as well. Okay, just to show you that I'm not talking smoke and mirrors. This is actually a meeting that we did fairly recently. This is one of our Link and Skype all hands. You'll notice we have probably about 300 people in the room. We have a lot of people, probably near 1,000 people online. We have the main AV camera here. This is a high-def camera connected to a capture device going into this laptop. We also have the feed from the wireless mics coming to the mixer, that's also connected to that laptop. This guy is running what you can see on the screen, so it's full screen. One nice little feature is, if you've got a remote presenter, you can pop out the video of the remote presenter and drag them into the screen if you've just got one screen, or you're just mirroring, you're just duplicating both screens. In this case, both screens are duplicated, so we don't have split screen in this particular conference room. So that works quite well. And this guy is moderating what's going on, and there's a laptop somewhere back here with a clicker that the presenter are advancing the slides when they want to. So that's how we do our sessions. Just a quick note about what audio and video devices to use. Make sure you use approved audio and video devices. There's the link on the slides there. That takes you to the approved audio and video devices. For the larger cameras and that kind of thing, we don't have a list of larger cameras. What we use for video cameras in Microsoft, we use the Vadio AV Bridge or equivalent hardware. That allows you to connect an AV camera via a USB port into the laptop that's running Link, and that produces a really good AV video connection. But what's good also is it has a line level, for those who know about audio, a line level audio input that you can take from your sound source, your mixer, whatever, and that brings that straight in as well. If you just want to bring audio into Link and maybe use a webcam, just stick a webcam up down there somewhere for a lower quality experience, then you can use USB input devices to get the audio in. There are several manufacturers that make USB-enabled mixers, soundboards. Allen & Heath make one, Behringer make several, and there are lots of other companies that make those as well. They come in basically to link. It looks like a single microphone. So that's really good. The third option is just to push something into a line input on the laptop. If your laptop's got a line, or drop it down to mic level, that also works. Be very careful with that, because the PC Windows 8 or Windows 7 has its own automatic volume control work, and then Link also, the codecing Link, has its own volume control and also error cancellation and noise cancellation. So be very careful with the kind of signal you're feeding in. Make sure really it's a good voice and not much else apart from that. Okay, so that's approved devices. Preparing the meeting content. Okay, prepare the meeting content. It's okay to do it 5 minutes before the meeting because it'll all work okay. Absolutely wrong. Always do it at least the day before. Yeah, I know the executives will always come up and they have the last minute change. But basically, try and get your meeting content prepared and uploaded into the presentation long before the meeting. Okay, I'm going to cover each one of these before we go. Okay, so let me give you a demo of this. Now, one thing I didn't talk about before, which is really bad, was don't copy the meeting content from one calendar entry to another. Okay, I'm just going to close that down for now. What I meant by that, and I did forget to cover this, in this meeting here, okay, you have this content. That content has the URL for the meeting. So you might think, okay, what I will do, I will get that weird meeting organizer account that funny Link guy set up on that funny server somewhere, and I'll just copy this stuff, okay, I'll right-click and I'll copy it, and I'll create my own meeting invite, and I'll send that out to everybody, okay? That would sound like a really good idea. However, it's not. The reason is that behind all this stuff is actually a lot of metadata. It's a lot of black magic that goes on behind the scenes. And what that black magic does is it tells Link and it tells Outlook how to handle this Link meeting. Okay? So if you just copy that data across, if you try and join the Link on, wow, look at that, I have one here, a Link room system, okay? The Link room system will not find the join meeting link. Okay. Also, remember in Link itself, I went into the calendar and this item here was blue, so I could double click on the item and it allowed me to join the meeting. If you copy the Link coordinates into another meeting, that will not work either. If you remember those fuzzy images where you saw there was a join link on my iPhone and my Surface, those will not appear either. Okay, so all the special stuff that Link and Outlook do behind this, or Link and Exchange do behind the scenes to manage all those join links and everything, they will always not appear. Okay, so that's why I don't copy the meeting link from one person from one meeting to another. Okay, I knew I had to say that quickly. Right, so meeting details. So what we're doing is we are in a meeting here. I have a slide presentation. Let me go into documents. I have a... Wow, this looks like a really good presentation. Come on, PowerPoint. Yep, I think I want to watch this and represent this. This looks like really cool. So what I can do from within PowerPoint, you may not know this, unless you were at one of the previous sessions, you can present online. You can click on that, and you can click on that, and it will upload it directly into my live meeting, which is pretty cool. Now, here it comes. So it's loading it in now, and you see that all the meeting participants can see this. Now, I can do this on this account because I'm logged in as Jim. Jim is a presenter. So I'm loading this into the meeting now. Now, obviously, you would do this before the meeting, so you wouldn't have lots of attendees like we have here. But hey, this is just demo. Okay, you can see that the slides are there. But notice as I hover over, I haven't clicked anything. I've just hovered over this blue button here. Note that the PowerPoint presentation is still loading. if I exit the meeting now, so I'm uploading the presentation, I can see the presentation, so I think, great, it's there, I'll exit the meeting, I'll join the meeting tomorrow when the full meeting is and the presentation will be there. No, it won't, because it hasn't finished uploading. Oops, it has now. So now I can exit the meeting, rejoin the meeting, and the presentation will be there. Now, there's one interesting thing here. Sometimes, if you upload a presentation as a presenter, I have seen, and I'm not sure what's going on here yet, that if you're not the meeting organizer, the presenter, the presentation doesn't always stay in the meeting if you close the meeting and then restart it. But I've seen that if the organizer loads content into the meeting, that content is always there when you go back into that meeting. Okay? So I would recommend for now that the organizer uploads the meeting content. Okay? The day of the meeting, if you're not going to close the meeting down, then by all means allow the other presenters to load the content. But I would recommend for now just have the presenter, the meeting organizer load the content. Now, one thing I said on that slide before was it's good to have a separate presenter machine which has the clicker connected so the presenter can advance the slides. One thing presenters love to do is to see the presentation view. Now, on my screen here, for my slides, I have the PowerPoint presentation view. We don't have that in Link, but what we do have is the thumbnails option. Okay, and in thumbnails, I can see the slides as a presenter. Now, note here that Amy is also watching the presentation, but I can advance the slides through here, and I can jump to the slide that I wanted to, okay? So I've selected that slide, and because I'm presenting, eventually it will change. Come on, prove me wrong. Come on, change. That's weird, why hasn't that done it? Ha, well, it should change anyway. And of course, the demo gods aren't gonna be with me. This is actually really strange, because she shouldn't be a presenter, and yet she's still allowed to advance the slide. So something's gone wrong here, but, oh, there we go. It's woken up. Okay, so I can advance the slides. Whoops, I've gone too far there. So I'm going to go back, and I know what it is. It's the poor network. It's because everybody else is using the network at the same time. And note also that this is happening. I don't know if you can see this on here. I'm just going to pop the video out and make it full screen. That this is also happening on the Surface as well. And also, you can't really see it, on the Surface and also on the iPad, which now can display full content for these things as well. So that's really cool. Okay. Now, I was talking a while ago about when you're connecting the machines to displays. So what you can do is, say this machine here is the one that's connected to the in-room display. I can run that content full screen. I can get rid of the presenter of the videos, the faces, okay? So that's what you would see in the conference room, okay? Now, for some reason, I'm getting that blue bar across the top. This is all running virtually, so I think that's why we're getting little artifacts. But basically, that's what you would see on the screen, and as the presenter advances the slides, they would see them. So that's quite nice. Move to the top of the screen, and get rid of that. That button there was that one that I did full screen. If you have two screens, what you can also do, and let me just get this one up as well. Okay, I can run this full screen as well, so I can see the presenter videos and the other videos as well. Now, of course, don't forget that once you've scheduled your large meeting policy, the actual gallery view will disappear, and all you will see is the actual speaker. The actual person speaking, so that will be full screen as well. So if you have two screens, you can run them side by side, use dual screen on your laptop, and you can see the speaker on one screen and the presentation on the other screen. Okay, so that's good. So I'm going to press that button and lock those back in again. So that will all work fine. Good. So we have the content loaded into the presentation, but there's more. There's more. What I am going to do, though, is I want to show a video through Link. Now, Link does not really have a feature where you can add a video and show a video in Link at all at the moment. Unfortunately, it's been a long asked ask, and we just haven't, unfortunately, been able to do it at the moment. But what we are going to do, though, is to show you how to embed videos in PowerPoint and make it actually work in Link. Okay? So I will show you this first, but there are some caveats, so don't leave before the end, because I will warn you about it afterwards. So I'm going to create a new Link presentation here. Okay, a blank presentation. I'm going to add two new slides, and for the layout for that, I'm just going to create a blank slide, and I'm going to say video demo, and I'm going to say Q&A at the end. Okay, and on this slide here, I'm going to insert a video. So this, by the way, is the only way we support showing video in Link. Don't be tempted to do a screen share, a desktop share. Doesn't work. Desktop sharing has a maximum refresh rate of about 8 frames a second. So your video is going to be very choppy, and I'm sure you've all done it and it doesn't work. Okay, so we've got lots of stuff here. We've got a video. I'm not going to spend too much time on this. One thing you can do, though, when you go into playback, you can trim it so you can take out the... In fact, let's just do that very quickly. I just want to trim the end. So just for the sake of this, I'm going to trim the end to about 30 seconds. Just get rid of that guy talking and finish there. Okay, good. Right, so that's trimmed. Okay, so this is now 30 seconds. A nice one is, do I want to start the video playing back when I click the video or when I just get to that video page, that slide? I'm going to have it when I get to the video slide, so I'm going to have it start automatically. I'm going to have it play full screen, okay? So that should work. So I can now save that file, save as. I'm going to put it on my computer, on my desktop, and I'm going to call it video demo. Perfect. I'm now going to upload it into Link, and it's all going to work perfectly. Absolutely wrong. It won't. It will never work. Okay? Why is that? Because if I look at that video, which is probably down here somewhere, where is it? Yes, it's the Microsoft Heat video. It's an MOV file, which looks like it may be an Apple QuickTime or something like that. So it's not. PowerPoint doesn't like those too much. It will play in PowerPoint fine. But because when we load video up into Link, it actually gets loaded when we use the PowerPoint web application to display the PowerPoint. And that has a limited subset of videos that you can support. Okay, so what we're going to do is you go into the info section of PowerPoint and you see two options here. If it's a nice video, like an MP4 or a WMV, you may not see the optimize, but you'll definitely see the compress. Click optimize. And it's going to process that very quickly. It's going to chunter along and process and do and do and do and do and do. Dum, dum, dum. Okay, it doesn't take long. Trust me. I'm a Microsoft guy. It doesn't take long. Okay, it's done. Good? Right, that option has now gone away because it's done it for the PowerPoint, for the video in the PowerPoint. It hasn't touched the video on the original file, just the one in PowerPoint. And now I'm going to compress it. You can do presentation quality, but I always use internet quality. You do get some what they call digital artifacts, a little bit of blocking and that kind of stuff, but generally it displays pretty well. And for displaying through Link, it actually worked really well. Note here that the initial size, if you haven't got superhuman sites, you won't see this. The initial size is 88.4 megabytes. It's completed, and it's saved 80.1 megabytes. So it's reduced it quite a lot. Okay, so now what I'm going to do is to save it as a different file. Okay, so if I want to go back to the original file, I still have the original file, and I'm going to call it compressed. With my bad typing. Good. So now I have my video there and I'm still in the Link meeting. Oh, by the way, one other thing. If you copy the video, if you copy the jumping around here an awful lot, get a grip, Mike. If you copy the contents from one calendar entry to another, another thing that doesn't appear is this join online in your Outlook reminder. That disappears as well. So, but that was way back in the presentation. So, but I just thought I'd revisit that. Okay, so let's get back into the meeting. Now, at the moment, okay, Jim is quite happily presenting. Okay, I'm going to pop the video back in there. He's quite happily presenting, and the slides are going on. Okay, but somebody has just brought me this memory stick with this super important video presentation that I need to play as part of the meeting. If Jim uploads it, it will immediately stop his PowerPoint presentation and you'll see the loading screen. Okay, that's not super cool on a nicely managed presentation. So what you do here is another person who is a presenter goes in and then can choose PowerPoint, and note you get this other option. The current presenter doesn't get this option, but any other presenter does get this option. You can either present it now or you can add to use later. So that's what I'm going to do. And the video I want to add to use later is on my desktop, and it's video compressed because I couldn't type properly. Okay. So now nothing's happening. Jim is still quite happily presenting. Things are going on really well there. Okay. But the video that we've just uploaded is now being uploaded. And also note that I don't see anything here, but I can go into manage presentable content, and it shows me now that both videos are available. If I'd done that quicker, you'd have seen a progress bar going across the top there, which says that it hasn't quite uploaded yet. Okay. So when we get to the stage where either Jim or I want to present that video, what I can now do is go in and I can play this content. Okay, so I'm taking over as presenter. I can now play the content. Okay, it's going to load up. And also, let's get Amy's, let's get Amy's screen coming up as well. Okay, she's running her, go away. There we go. She's running her thing as well. Okay, so we're going to do a video demo. And we're now going to go to the next slide. And because I put play on the next slide, you'll see that the video is going to start playing. And it's starting to play on everybody's PC. Now, this is interesting that actually the video is lagging behind on some PCs. This can be a problem. And this is where I said hang around. Because what Link does is it basically sends the video out to every Link connection. Okay, or in fact, it's the PowerPoint web app that's doing it. It sends the video out to every connection. But the problem is here is that the video starts to play on every connection once it's been partially received, once it's got enough to buffer. And if it doesn't receive enough to fully play the video, it will stop until it receives enough, a bit like a YouTube video that doesn't always play. The problem is that when the presenter machine, the machine here, gets to the end of the video, it may well stop all the videos from playing, and if the presenter advances to the next slide, everybody whose video hasn't finished playing may not see the end of the video. Okay? There's no way around that at the moment. Well, actually there is. What you can do is to add some black buffering onto the end of your video of maybe 5 or 10 seconds to allow for those people on poorer web connections. Okay? But this does work, and it's okay. It does work in presentations. We have used it to some success. The only way to play videos at the moment through Link, and it's okay. It does work. New features very quickly. Who attended all the new client features sessions? Wow. Okay. So this is all new for you. This is really cool. Okay. So I'm going to demo it very quickly. Whoa. What's he going to demo? Tell me what it's going to demo. Lock video spotlight, I am mute, Q&A, recording, and roster management, all in 5 minutes, believe it or not. Okay, so let's have a look at new features. Right, back to the demo machines. Isn't Office 365 performing well? It's actually doing really well. Oh, what a silly thing to say, because it's going to go wrong now, I'm sure. Anyway, so first thing is video spotlight. Okay, so we have a guy here who just decides that because I haven't disabled video from everybody, he's going to start sending his video. So you can see here that he's sending his video. That's Dave, okay? And maybe somebody on her iPhone decides that she's going to start sending her video as well. So we've got her sending a video. So we've got lots of videos going on, okay? Now, the problem with Link is that, well, in fact, it's quite a good feature. Normally, it swaps video based on voice. So if he speaks, his video would become the main speaking video, okay? We don't want that in a large meeting. So what we can do is we can right-click on, say, Mike Jordan's video, which is this camera here, and we can say lock video spotlight. You can do it from the picture here, or you can do it from the roster, and I can say here, lock video spotlight. What that does is then force one video. Remember before, I was showing you popped out video? I could have shown you that then, it would actually make more sense, but I wanted to wait and show you now because it's a cool new feature. Now this has actually been in Link 2013, since we released 2013. Not many people know about it, okay? The other people in the meeting will see this message to say, a presenter locked the video spotlight on someone, okay? But any presenter can lock a video spotlight on any video source, so that's really useful. Note also, though, that the video goes widescreen. You don't have that pan and crop that you had before. So if I unlock the video now, okay, my video goes square again, and people are seeing my square video, but that's okay. So that's lock video spotlight, really useful. Okay, I am mute. This is really nice. So we have good old Amy here, and she's going to say, wow, that's so cool. And to prove it, she can't type, okay? And then if I had the audio on, everybody would get, ding, you have a new video. You have a new IM. Ding, you have a new IM. Okay, what's the problem? Okay, ding, ding, everybody's got the IM. Okay, so what I can do as a presenter, I can now go, now note it's not in the content, it's in the meeting, okay, and I'm just hovering over that, I haven't clicked on that. If I click on it, it will either put the roster up or hide the roster. I hover over it, and it's what we call a peek. Wow, it's a peek. Okay, normally you get the participant list, but if you go into the next one, it's the actions, I can now say, no meeting I am. And note immediately, Amy's IM has gone away, so she can't IM. That happens for everybody, not just attendees, it happens for presenters as well. But we've disabled IM, instant messaging, in the meeting. That's pretty cool. What I'm going to do, though, is just re-enable it just for a second, because the next feature I want to show you is something we added as well. And if you were in some of the other client sessions, which I gather you weren't, we were talking about Q&A. Okay, not the Q&A that was on that slide there, but this is a whole new Q&A manager. Okay, so come on, Office 365, you know you can do it. So, we have Q&A. Now, Amy sees Q&A come up. It's an alternative to the presentation. And no, for now, you can't pop it out. You choose one or the other. Okay, but Amy's going to say, why is I am gone, okay, and she's going to send that message. Now, this is why I said you want the separate laptop with the person moderating the Q&A, because the presenter doesn't want to be bothered by people like Amy asking dumb questions. Okay, sorry for any Amy's in the audience, by the way. Okay, but so I'm moderating the Q&A, and I can say here, okay, because you were pain. Okay, now that's cool, and I've answered that question. Amy's seen it and she likes it or hates it, but unfortunately everybody else has seen it as well. Q&A is a really good way of everybody asking questions and everybody seeing the answers. Okay, so it's really useful for that. Really good in the moderated Q&A arena, that's okay. But notice, wait just a second, what happened when we put Q&A on, it automatically disabled IM, okay? That's because we think normally that if you want Q&A, you don't want to be bothered with IM as well. But because when we schedule the meeting, we didn't disable IM when we schedule the meeting, we can now go in, if you want to, and re-enable IM. I just hovered over there and now clicked no meeting IM, and then I was okay, and now she can say thanks, and I'll be more careful, etc., etc. So that was Q&A Manager. At the end of the meeting, you can save as, so you can save the Q&A, and it saves it as a text file. Okay, so it does work pretty well. We've used it a lot. It's really good. You can disable IM, still use Q&A, and it's great. The only issue is that the attendees have to choose whether to watch the presentation or to watch the Q&A. But it's quite a neat feature. Question there?
Does that Q&A work on the mobile clients?
Does the Q&A work on the mobile clients? Not yet. No. It's in fact, what you will see is when you first start the Q&A, if you're a presenter, it will say some people have joined the client that can't support this feature. So it doesn't work on the mobile clients there. Okay. Another thing, very quickly, and I'll just show you this very briefly. In the main link clients now, we have a new option for recording. So in Link 2010 was quite neat at recording, but it saved stuff as WMV files and some weird format as well, which was multiple files altogether. What we've done in Link 2013 is to go to the industry standard MP4 file format when we save videos. When we first did it, though, it caused a problem because to get the right quality size, to get the right quality, it created quite large videos. So what we've done now is to give you the option of choosing either a small size that you can upload to an iPhone or a Windows phone or whatever you want to, which is fairly small, or you can have the largest size, which is the best quality that maybe you can post onto a website, something like that. So you can choose those options here. 480p, this is for techies who love HD. Oh, my badge is gone. Techies who love HD, they know what these things are. 480 is the smallest quality. 720 is a medium-sized quality, and 1080p is the highest quality. That's the largest file size, that's a medium file size, that's a small file size. We can't exactly say what. There is a blog post that actually describes some of the sizes you can expect from those. You set it before the meeting, and it affects the recording on this particular machine. Link is still recording per machine, okay, rather than anything else. I'm running out of time, so I'll take your question at the end, if I may. I'll take it now. Go on. Okay, right. I'll take it at the end. Okay, I will leave time for questions at the end. I promise. Right, and I have one more thing, and that is roster management. Okay, hold on to your hats. This could get scary. Okay. Any link client, any link meeting, even Office 365, if I have over 75 participants in that meeting, I will now see this message, okay? This message will come up just by the people icon on the bottom of the link clients in the meeting, and it will say, we've changed your layout for the best large meeting experience. There are too many people to show the video gallery, the gallery view. The participant list, okay, i.e. the attendees, and IM errors. Okay, that's basically I won't say what I was going to say, because I'll say that later. Okay, so what that does is it gets rid of gallery view, so you can't see the five videos across the top. But what it also does is it gets rid of the participant list completely. It goes. Okay, so attendees cannot see presenters or attendees. Okay. I will say again, this is for any link meeting on Link 2013 server using Link 2013 clients. Okay? If you hover over the participant list button there, you will get the message to say the participant list isn't available for large meetings. Okay? But if you are a presenter in that meeting, you will still see both the participants and the presenters. You'll see the presenters and the attendees. So this does not apply to presenters, only to attendees. Even though the presenter will get that message, okay, it actually doesn't apply to him, but that's what the attendees will see. Okay? So that's what happens for any link meeting. Now, if you do allow large meetings true as part of your meeting policy, the behavior is slightly different. What that does is, first of all, when you're logged in as an attendee, so here I am logged in as Jim Glynn. On this slide, I'm logged in as Jim Glynn. You will notice that Jim only sees one attendee himself, doesn't see any other attendees, but he does see all the meeting presenters, so he could ask them a question over IM or whatever. But you may be able to see, probably not, you may be able to see that we've got 383 participants in the meeting. Okay, so where did that go? Where did the list of attendees go? That's what allow large meetings true actually does. It sets that particular behavior up. Okay, so what happens when that meeting reaches 75 attendees? Surely the whole roster disappears. No, it doesn't. What's happening with the other behavior, if I go back two slides, what's happening with this behavior? This is a client behavior. The client is deciding that it has a list of 75 participants, so I'm going to hide the whole participant list because I can't cope with that. It's going to cause too much resource hit on the server and on the client. Okay? So what happens there is, in this case, if you get over 75 presenters in this list, the whole list will disappear. But I would recommend you don't get over 75 presenters in a large meeting, because that's unmanageable. Okay? If that didn't make sense, please replay it a number of times, and eventually it may become clear. Okay. Right. Just remember, you can do, in your conferencing policy, you can do allow large meetings. I'm pointing on my screen, not yours. You can do allow large meetings true. You can also still set it to false, and we will still support meetings up to 1,000 users if you want to get the other roster behavior. But I would strongly recommend that you use allow large meetings true to get the correct roster behavior in that particular situation. So, in summary, and I am 2 minutes away from the end, okay, so I wanted to show you that Link does support meetings up to 1,000 users. I wanted to give you some best practices, the kind of stuff we've done in Microsoft. Okay. I hope you enjoyed the presentation. Please fill out the evals. Go online to my link. I think it's my link. Fill out the evals. If you like me, give top scores, because they're the ones that count. If you don't like me, please say why you didn't like me, and I'll never speak to you again, but I may actually try and do something better in future. Okay, so thank you very much, and I will definitely take some Q&A. So if you jump up to the mic, sir, or just shout it out, I will take some Q&A.
So in the recording, what is getting recorded? Is it including content, Q&A, video?
In the meeting, when it records content, what it actually does, it records the whole thing that you can see in your client. So it records basically, it records a list of the attendees, it records the content. I think that's, but it's one file now. So you don't get separate files, it's one basic file. But really, it's mainly focused on the actual content itself. But you do get a list you do get a list of the roster, and you also get the IM as well in that video as well.
So is it the presenter view that is what is it recording?
It's the view that's on the machine that's doing the recording. Because the recording is per machine. Now, if you want to have three different standards, three different qualities of recording, so these three different qualities of recording here, 480, 720, 1080, log on to with three machines and set each one as a different standard, and then you'll get three different levels of recording to see which one you like better. Okay? Yes, sir.
The question revolves network utilization and bandwidth. Aside from tweaking maybe the conferencing policy to set it to VGA instead of 1080p and stuff like that,
yep.
What have you found to be good policies or best practices on the network side?
Best practice on the network side, that's a whole new session, which actually I think has already been done. But for large meetings especially, make sure you enable, the first thing is make sure you enable QoS, quality of service, on your whole network. That's by far the best thing. In Microsoft, we had a lot of problems with voice and video quality, We went through and made sure that QoS was enabled right through from desktop right through to servers. That vastly improved quality. If you have a look at the CS conferencing policy parameters, there are some parameters that you can set to limit the amount of bandwidth that a particular client will consume. It may be worth tweaking some of those to reduce some of those slightly, especially on the presenter machines. Be careful not to reduce it too much, especially on the one sending the video. But generally, with the settings that we've applied now, that does make that does reduce the network bandwidth, and especially by taking away the gallery view and those kind of things, it does reduce the network bandwidth a fair bit. And also roster management, that caused a lot of network chatter that we don't have now. Okay. But also, yeah, check the network best practices as well, those sessions, because they went into a lot more detail about that than I can cover at the moment. So the question was, since RDP is the biggest bandwidth hog, that's actually why we say we don't support, in large meetings, we don't support desktop application sharing. So don't use that for large meetings, because that actually uses RDP, the remote desktop protocol. Okay, so don't use that. Are things happening in the future? You might think that. I couldn't possibly comment. Another question.
We do a lot of conferencing with external clients and customers, and so they're calling in on PSTN. They're using the web client, the downloadable client, sure. as a guest. One of the things that we've seen is that people calling in on PSTN, even when the meeting default is set to mute, they come in unmuted. Is that something we can fix somewhere or change?
I've seen that as well. I, off the top of my head, I don't think so, but give me your contact details afterwards and I'll check to make sure. I've seen that as well. I'm not in fact even sure if you set mute all during when you schedule the meeting. I'm not in fact sure if that achieves that in any way. But I will check and get back to you on that. So give me your contact details.
That actually leads me to my second question. I've been attending the QoE sessions and the CQM sessions, and they're all basically saying, you know, what you said, QoS, which we can't do externally. But they're also saying that one bad person on the meeting can impact everybody else on the meeting. You've heard that. Okay.
Yes.
So how do you guys handle that? I mean, we're doing 50 to 100 people, and I'm getting beat up over this, and it's usually external people. How do you guys manage that at this size and not allow one person to impact everybody?
So the reason that they're impacting is because they're either sending bad video or bad audio. Mute video and mute audio for participants, and then they won't impact the issue, because they're not dragging down everybody else, because their video and audio are muted, they can't send them.
Okay.
So that's the best way to handle that.
So you see how the two are related?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Okay, I'll hit you afterwards. Thank
sure.
you.
Sure, yeah. And you have a question?
Yeah, there is one feature that is available right now in live meeting that is not supported with link meetings.
Yes.
Which is the call me at. And the pauses that you can put some commas to include the pauses. So if you are on an extension on inside the PBX system, so it will call you and then it will include some pauses and then dial the extension number. And
yep.
We are using that for when people use in the live meeting, they also do that to bridge an external audio conferencing system.
Yes.
And that's not supported with Link right now.
Yes.
Any plans to support that in the future?
I don't know. Possibly in some form or another, but probably not the way and the reason that live meeting does it. We are looking at various different solutions to overcome that issue. I can't say much about that at the moment, but there are some things in the works to allow you to use external suppliers and that kind of thing, or use PSTN and that kind of thing in a better way. So, yeah, things are in the works, but maybe not in the way you're thinking. So There's a lot of lateral thinking about how we can handle all these conferencing issues. So, but bear with us, and we'll get to you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Right, thanks very much indeed for attending. Cool. Don't forget the evals and enjoy the party.